Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Tuesday, July 16th, 2019. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, good to be here.
Excellent. Also with me today, I have Dave Hamilton. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks for having me. It's fun to be here.
Yeah, and I'm glad we could catch you before your appearance later on another
show. Yeah, that's right. I'm joining Mac Break Weekly for the day. So, yeah, looking forward to that. It should be fun.
It should be good. Now, yeah. I wanted actually, Dave, to start with you because I wanted to talk to you about mesh Wi-Fi. I know this is a topic near and dear to your heart, and this is the intersection of recent updates to your Wi-Fi guide as well as Prime Day.
Yeah, for sure. That's right. So, yeah, the TLDR on this would be that Eero, it remains one of my favorite mesh Wi-Fi products and is available for basically 50% off with Prime Day. So run and go. If you're thinking about mesh, I would say run and go get Eero today. So we'll sort of back into this, right? Eero and Plume SuperPods, which are their second generation stuff, are definitely my favorites at the top of my list in terms of functionality, ease of use, reliability, updates from the manufacturer, like attention to the product is a very important factor here in mesh that we'll get into the why in a minute. But Eero and Plume definitely hit all those marks. A very close second to those two is TP-Link, with their Deco line, which is way less expensive than Eero and Plume usually are, except for today because of Prime Day, and you get Eero for, you know, it's $99 for a single Eero Pro, which is their second generation tri-band unit. You can get three of them for, you know, $297, or you could get three of them for $299. That's a weird thing in Amazon Prime Day. Normally that's $499 to buy a three pack, but you can get the three pack for $299, or you can buy three individual ones for $297 when you add it all up. So choose whichever path you like. Then Eero also has this piece of hardware that they call a beacon, which plugs directly into the wall. Like there is no separate transformer or plug or cable. It just sits on your wall, doesn't have an Ethernet port in it. It is just a Wi-Fiable mesh point, but for the way many people set up their homes, that can work really well. And they've got those Eero Pro, which does have Ethernet ports and is tri-band, plus two beacons, which are dual band, for $199, which is a great price, or you can get with one beacon for $149. Don't do that. Get the second beacon for $50. You will thank me later when you decide, oh, if only I had a, oh, right. You know, so, yeah. But seriously, for most homes, at the way mesh works, two access points, two mesh points is probably enough. Most of these systems come with three, and that's okay. You don't want to overdo it because having too much Wi-Fi will actually start interfering with things. But you know, two to three is generally more than enough for most homes. So the idea, why do you want mesh? Well, the idea behind mesh is that you've got multiple access points spread throughout the home. Now, this is something you could do on your own by buying, you know, different routers and setting them to the same Wi-Fi name and all of that. But then you're managing them all independently and none of them knows about the other. Mm-hmm. And that's where mesh really comes into play because you get one management interface. All of the points know about each other, which means they know which points have more devices connected, which points don't. That can be very handy information for you as the, you know, resident network admin at your house. But it can also be really handy information just for the mesh to have itself. When your device goes to join, the ultimate decision is always up to your device, which access point it joins, whether it joins a 2.4 gigahertz or a 5 gigahertz radio, all of that ultimately is up to the device. But the mesh can sort of hint things, and sometimes it can nudge things, and sometimes it can shove things so that the devices make the right choice. Because what your devices don't know is, hey, that mesh point that I want to connect to that's close to me and has a good signal, they don't know, your device has no idea whether that, whether it is the only device connecting to it or if it's the 50th device connecting to it. But the mesh can know that. And so it can nudge things and say, hey, you should move over there. You've got a decent enough signal. So that's where some of the smarts of mesh can really come in and help. Plus, of course, mesh can give you that coverage throughout your house. But even for folks that don't need the extra coverage, the coverage is sort of the easy button to press. Like, I need more coverage. Mesh is probably going to do it for me, right? Good to go. Done. But even if you don't, if you've got multiple people in the house streaming, you know, Netflix or YouTube or whatever, have the way Wi-Fi works, especially with our Apple devices, is one device gets to talk at any point in time. It seems like all your devices are connected to the Wi-Fi simultaneously. They're associated with the Wi-Fi simultaneously, but they are not talking simultaneously. It goes in, everybody gets their turn, and then they're shut down so that the next person can get, or the next device can get its turn. And when you've got one, even if, you know, your house is small enough where you don't need it, don't need mesh for coverage, you might still run into bandwidth contention issues as your devices sort of jockey for position. If you've got three people trying to stream different things, you know, you got your Apple TV, somebody's on an iPad, somebody's on a phone, they're all sort of trying to jockey for this real-time data. That can be a real issue. Mesh can help with that. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure there's more questions, but there's our opening volley.
Yeah. The first thing is, if you have tried to solve the problem of that part of your house or, you know, the section of the backyard or whatever, where your network is crap and you've tried other ways to fix this, most of those ways suck. And the reason I know this is because I have tried to do this myself and help others. And it's been kind of a disaster, because even if I can get it up and running, the minute anything goes weird, then it's a complete nightmare for the person who's trying to do it if that person's not a network admin. And my idea of a good time is not sitting around troubleshooting networks. So it's not
same.
Great.
Like, I like it. Like, it's fun at times, but it's not fun all the time.
Right. I like problem solving.
Right.
The problem solving of it, you know, getting on the trail and sorting out the thing and figuring out the problem and then figuring out how to solve it. Like, that part is fine. But especially with networks, So,
well, the problem is it you would need to troubleshoot it when it happens. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's at, you know, say 8 o'clock at night when you wanted to watch a movie instead of having fun troubleshooting your network. So, yeah.
Right.
Right.
And so one of the great things about mesh is that mesh makes this easy. You just get these little outposts, you know, beacons or whatever they're called, depending on which system you have. And you plug them in and you have Wi-Fi from that point instead of from wherever the other one was. And that can be a really great option because it's all an integrated system. Like Dave was talking about management. That's usually the thing that gives people the most grief and heartache is trying to get all disparate gear to work together. Or even like I have two of the same router and I'm going to use this second one to extend my network. That way lies madness. Ask me how I know. And so one of the great things about the mesh stuff is that it's also consistently gotten better. And part of that has to do with attention, I think you called it, Dave, developer attention to the product.
Yeah, that's right. Some of it has gotten better. And that's the stuff that the manufacturers are paying attention to updating. Everybody's first entry into the mesh field has had some sort of problem.
Oh,
and
sure.
It's because this stuff is really hard to test. I mean, we're talking about Wi-Fi, and in most cases, you know, you don't have Ethernet in your walls, so your mesh points need to connect with each other over Wi-Fi. If you do have Ethernet in your walls, then you want to make sure you get mesh points that can support that. And most of them can, but not all. So with Wi-Fi, You can test in a lab. You can test in your employees' homes. You can test in the homes of your employees' friends. And you will learn things at each of those stops, right? But then when you yes. release it out to the masses, you will learn more. It's just how it works. Right. And this is part of what I really like about Plume and why they float to the top of my list. Eero and Plume, if they merged together, and I realize they won't, but if they merged together, they would build the perfect mesh system. And the reason is this. Eero has added something via software, which is a testament, again, to their attention, but also a testament to how important it is to start with good hardware, because they added something via software that I think most other vendors can't do because they started with slower CPUs. And that is something they call it SQM, Smart Queuing Management. But it's what I call buffer bloat protection. And it's the thing that protects you from having a slow network internet experience, not just network experience, but a slow internet experience when all of your devices are, you know, blasting their Backblaze uploads or their iCloud photo easy for me to say, iCloud photo library uploads, those sorts of things to get them up to the network. That can actually slow your downstream too. I won't get into the particulars here, but mm-hmm. trust me, it does, right? And it's a part of what falls under the umbrella called QoS or quality of service. Mm-hmm. So Eero has solved that problem. Plume has not, perhaps because they don't have CPUs fast enough. I don't know. Perhaps it just hasn't shown up on their engineering radar yet. What Plume has solved that Eero has not quite gotten to yet is that Plume is so smart about how each device connects best. And they use a cloud-based system with machine learning so that when you connect with, you know, a Samsung phone, it knows, okay, this phone, we need to apply a certain profile to the network so that this phone can connect the right way and get the best experience. And that's going to be different from the way an iPhone 10 connects because everybody follows standards, but standards in Wi-Fi and especially these standards in mesh and roaming and all of that are not implemented in a standard way, right? By manufacturers. Everybody says they're following the rules and they are. The rules just aren't specific enough. So, mm-hmm. So Plume has that, and I've experienced that, where it's like roaming around with these devices, they hop to the right mesh point consistently and quickly. With Eero, devices will tend to hold on a little bit longer. Again, this is, you know, we're nitpicking here, right? Either one of these is going to be good. I would give the nod to Eero because that queuing management, that buffer bloat protection mm-hmm. is, I think, more important in most cases, but again, it's impossible to say
right.
what's best in your case. But again, they're paying attention, right? They're doing stuff. TP-Link also paying attention, doing mm-hmm. stuff.
Right.
Netgear has their Orbi mesh. I share this as a PSA. they pay attention. They started with a foundation that was flawed. They could not. It wasn't true mesh, meaning all the satellite units, if you want to call them that, had to connect straight back to the main router. They could not do what's called multi-hop, meaning mm-hmm. if you have like a long house and you want to put a satellite in the middle and one at the end, the one in the middle yeah. should be able to act as that thing. All the other mesh systems did that out of the gate. Orbi from Netgear did not. It does now. Orbi from Netgear also, and perhaps similarly, did not support Ethernet backhaul to your mesh points. It does now. But doing either of those things is still not the most reliable thing in the world. And it's probably because the foundation of their software is such that those things weren't supported and it's a bolt-on. Mm-hmm. That said, Orbi has the furthest range between, you know, base and satellite that I've ever seen. And they, you know, that they did engineer out of the gate. So if you have an outbuilding or something and you don't have Ethernet buried and you don't want to bury Ethernet, Orbi's probably your thing, but run it in the default configuration. So there you go. There you go. there's more. I could talk about this for hours, obviously.
Oh, I know.
I'm trying to hit the highlights for everybody here.
Right. And it's nice to have that option. And it's nice that you can get set up for a really reasonable price if you hop on it today. I think now, Andrew, you personally are not in the market for a mesh system. Is that correct?
Yeah, I am in the market for a router. Since I live alone in a small apartment, I'm not sure if mesh is best for me, but I am considering it as an option.
Well, so it is I'll if you team up with your neighbors.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I have a question, Dave, because there was one, I want to say it was a mesh system that Amazon purchased.
That's Eero.
And that's Eero. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Which now, no surprise, right? That they've got Prime Day deals on this and all of that.
The screaming deal. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the screaming deal. There's others, but that's the, 50%. Like, that's, it's amazing. It's great.
Yeah.
It really is. I will say this. When I saw that deal, I considered buying some extra Eero units, and every Eero, I have more than I need currently, and every one that I have, I've gotten for free as a review unit. Mm-hmm. So, like, the deal is that good that it made me start to think, if I ever need an extra, you know, like, that's probably the right price to pay.
Yes. Yeah. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, there you go.
This, of course, would lead me to a concern, much like probably Andrew's concern, about how much Amazon is going to mess with that particular system. Like, the reason Amazon bought, was it Ring or somebody, was so that you could let people in, that your doorbell could let people in your house. Your door lock, I mean, could let people in your house. And so I'm curious what the plan is for the Wi-Fi stuff, because... Like, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like there's an agenda there that I'm just not seeing yet. Like, I know it's there, but I just don't know what it looks like.
So let's think about this, right? Because what we know now about the Amazon acquisition of Eero is that Eero was not doing well financially at the time. This was not the big cash out for everybody. And it was, I'm sure they were cheering, but it wasn't quite the typical Silicon Valley exit that we all assumed it was on announce day. So Amazon had the ability to pick up this highly respected, well-made mesh system at probably bargain basement prices, right? Mm. Fire sale prices. And Google has Google Wi-Fi, and they are doing things like integrating their smart home stuff into their voice assistant stuff into those mesh points, right? So mm-hmm. Amazon's doing all kinds of things with their A-Lady, right? And it makes really good sense to bake that into, you know, smart speaker, mesh point, right? These are things that you want to have sort of scattered around your home at strategic locations. And it's great if they can be one device instead of two or even three. So speaker, voice assistant, mesh point, it all just sort of happens. I think, I'm guessing that's where they're going with this.
Okay.
There's valid concerns from people that are saying, well, I was okay with Eero having my data, but now that Amazon has the ability, because Eero is a cloud-managed system, so in theory, anything that your router knows, the cloud can know. That's not how it currently works, but it certainly could work that way, you know, down the road.
Right.
So does Amazon start harvesting that data and marketing to you, saying, hey, you have a bunch of Apple devices, maybe you want to buy an iMac or, you know, something like that.
Right.
Like, could they do that? Yes. But here's the thing, you know, if you trusted Eero before the acquisition, I argue there's more reason to trust them after. Because before the acquisition, Eero was this fast-moving startup in Silicon Valley, started by people that no one knew about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's owned by Amazon. If the fast-moving startup in Silicon Valley made a mistake and, you know, somehow leaked some or all of our user data, we would give them a pass pretty quickly. Like, hey, we're sorry. You know, we did this, move fast, break things. We were, you know, on the cutting edge of mm-hmm. what we could do with technology. We were looking to do like what Plume is doing and make sure that your experience was perfect. And we, you know, effed it up. Sorry. That's one thing. If it's Amazon that leaks your data, I don't know that they recover from that as well.
True.
And I think they know that, like in a big way. So, and they're a known entity. They have more to lose. Even if Eero lost everything, right? Like, they leaked data in a way that no one trusted them anymore. Okay, well, it's Eero that goes out of business. Okay, mm-hmm. well, you know what? So what? Amazon? No. There's a lot at stake there. So
that's true.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just wonder about...
It's no guarantee.
Yeah, but I wonder about, like the intercession, I guess, on Amazon's part. You know how, like, phones, like Windows, for example, like, went out as Windows the same on every device, and then each PC maker started adding their own stuff, their own stuff, their own stuff, and then, like, HP... Windows on an HP computer was almost totally different from it was than it was on a Dell, or totally different from a Toshiba machine or whatever. And
sure.
Like, so I just sort of wonder how much Amazon is going to wrap the Eero stuff in Amazon-ness, I guess. So that was the thing I was sort of wondering about. And like, to, like, your point is valid. And that's a thing that I was sort of considering, was like, how does this help Amazon in some way? And maybe that's it. So yeah, it definitely sounds like, but it definitely sounds like a good idea. Like, if you have trouble with Wi-Fi in your house, I'm lucky with the way my house is laid out. I haven't had issues with any dead spots or weird spots or anything where the connection is really flaky. So I haven't, but I've been following it with interest because I know lots of people who do and yeah. are inevitably going to call me and go, like, I saw this, or, you know, you talked about it on the show, and I want to make sure I'm making a smart decision here. So I always like to make sure that we are informed on that as much as possible. So
absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. So yep. We may have Andrew back for a counseling session on routers at some point in the near future, because that's a completely separate conversation when you don't have to worry about, like, mesh Wi-Fi and extending your network. Andrew, I did want to talk to you just for a second. We have a PSA about a feature of the App Store that is no longer with us.
Yeah, so Dave and I noticed something weird, and other people have noticed this too. There were some discussions on the Apple forums about this. So some people who are running iOS 12.3.1 have found that the ability to gift apps in the App Store is gone. Now, at first, we were thinking maybe they officially removed it for some reason, but I'm running the public beta of iOS 13, mm-hmm. and I do have the gifting apps option. Okay. So it must be some kind of bug that people are experiencing.
Yeah, and I haven't seen anybody actually talking about, well, I have iOS 12, and I still see it, and it's all fine. I don't have it. It doesn't work for me on either of my devices. I checked both my iPad and my iPhone, and neither of them have it. So, yeah, heads up, if you were looking to gift some apps, that's probably not going to happen for you in the immediate future unless you're on the public beta. So we just want to make sure we get that out there for everybody in case you need it. If you have more questions about Wi-Fi, particularly mesh Wi-Fi, Dave will be more than happy to answer them after Mac Break Weekly. You can email us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can even leave comments in the show notes. I want to thank both of you for being here today. Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I hope you enjoyed Wi-Fi school today.
I did.
And Dave, thanks for coming by to take us all to mesh Wi-Fi school.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's a topic I enjoy, and it's nice that we have these options now where we can solve these problems. So thanks for having me. Yeah, always
a pleasure. And that's really what it is being able to solve this for people who are interested in doing it. So yeah. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.